content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Catster.com and Dogster Magazine. On today's program, we'll begin with an article from Catster.com titled, Why Do Cats Follow You? By Philip Milnar. Ever wondered, why does my cat follow me? You're not alone. We take a look at some of the reasons why your cat and even stray cats follow you. Most times when I walk to the kitchen, my cat, Mimosa, decides to follow me. I've always put this down to the unflinching pursuit of food. Her treats are stored on the countertop, and her nightly wet food treat is served up in a bowl kept in a kitchen cupboard. It makes sense for Mimosa to chance her luck whenever I enter the kitchen. But it turns out there might be more reasons why a cat would follow a human around. If you've ever wondered to yourself, found yourself wondering, why do cats follow you? Here are some answers. Why does my cat follow me? It might be a kitten-like behavior. One of the answers to why does my cat follow me is that a cat following you around might be learned behavior that stems from her kitten days. Despite the image of cats as highly independent creatures, young kittens learn about life by following their mothers. This is sometimes called the mother-kitten connection. A kitten quickly learns that trailing her mother around will provide food, play, safety, and affection, pretty much all the things a human ends up undertaking when they adopt a cat. Jacqueline Munera, a certified cat behavior consultant at the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, builds on the point by adding that these sorts of positive interactions, which also include allo-grooming activities like brushing and petting, help forge a bond between cats and their humans. Some cats are quite curious and want to keep tabs on what their humans is doing, Jacqueline adds. Some cats just seem to enjoy hanging out with their humans and will follow them around different areas of the house. There can also be a darker side to this strong affiliative relationship, in which cats actually suffer from distress when they are separated from their humans. So the next time you find yourself asking, why does my cat follow me? The first answer could be it's a case of carrying out learned behavior. Is it a sign of affection? The second question, after wondering why does my cat follow me, is to ask whether her habit of trailing you around is a form of cat affection. It's quite a compliment to be chosen as a favorite individual, Jacqueline says. It means that the cat chooses to be around you and spend her time in your sphere of activity. There might also be an element of your cat missing you going on, especially if you're away from the house all day for work commitments. This can take the form of your cat following you around when you return and acting like she's trying to instigate a play or petting session. How should you reciprocate your cat following you and other signs of cat affection? It's important to acknowledge and return the affection your cat shows when she follows you around, but make sure to do so in a way your cat appreciates. The best way to reciprocate depends on your individual cat's preferences, Jacqueline says. Some cats may enjoy interactive playtime, while others don't really want interaction and just want to hang out near you. When reciprocating affection, it's smart to experiment to see where your cat likes to be petted or brushed. The areas that most cats prefer include under the chin, the cheeks, and the top of the head, Jacqueline says. Some cats really enjoy scratches on their back near the base of the tail, and there are even a few cats that like belly rubs and scratches. Owners can learn about cat body language so that they will be better able to understand their cat's communication signals, she adds. Why does a stray cat follow you? We have answered the question, why does my cat follow me? But what should you do if you notice what seems to be a stray cat following you outside? Well, first of all, Jacqueline points out if the feline is showing signs of affiliative or friendly behavior, then it's most likely the cat is socialized to humans and is not feral. In most cases, the cat is a friendly indoor-outdoor cat taking advantage of her outdoor privileges. Feel free to pet the cat if she seems open to it, although do so softly and without startling her. Also, make sure you introduce yourself properly. Also, wash and sanitize your hands afterward when you go home. If a cat continues to follow you indoors, maybe she's an indoor cat that's lost. Check the cat for collars or tags, scan local listings or social media alerts to see if someone is searching for a cat with a similar description. If the cat doesn't seem friendly, Jacqueline recommends watching her body behavior to try to judge if the cat is acting in a threatening or scared manner. Although she adds, this is generally not a very common problem because most feral cats leave humans alone. Check to see if the cat's ear has been tipped, the universal sign that a feral cat has been spayed or neutered. If not, consider getting them spayed or neutered through a local TNR program. Next, we'll move on to another article from Catster.com titled, This New Documentary Hopes to Change Community Cats' Fate, by Deborah Barnes. Catnip Nation is the spotlight in the fight to teach others about compassion and the responsibility we have as humans to care for animals that live in a unique netherworld between pets and wildlife. Trina Traster, a veteran journalist turned filmmaker of the multi-award-winning documentary Catnip Nation, has lived with and loved cats for years. Her idea to make a documentary about them began as an ode to those enigmatic creatures. But despite her passion and the popularity of cats in mainstream culture today, her journalist compass led to a darker place with a startling revelation that was misrepresented by the fandom. Cats have it rough, and the documentary became a different story. Initially, she didn't know there is a nationwide crisis with too many cats in shelters who will never be adopted, millions more euthanized, and an estimated 70 to 90 million feral or community cats living in cities, villages, and towns across the country, wherever they can find a food source. Nor did she know that many well-intentioned people who are trying to care for these cats are oppressed, threatened, and persecuted by outdated laws, unprotected rights, or uneducated politicians. Shining a spotlight. Determined to change the fate of a voiceless population and teach about the crisis, Catnip Nation was made to be an accessible and broad medium to tell the story by turning cameras on specific people. Sue and Ray Jones from Augusta, Kansas, are facing fines and imprisonment for putting out water for feral cats living behind their store. Stanley Lombardo of Oceanside, New York, was barred from his 30-year post as a volunteer at the local landfill where he cared for a colony of 40 abandoned cats. He had to walk away under orders from the town supervisor. Ken Salerno was the caretaker for 65 cats living under the Seaside Heights, New Jersey boardwalk when the newly elected mayor put out an executive order to euthanize all of the cats. Tina says she made a conscious decision to let the characters' lives and the hurdles they face tell the story. Filmgoers crave inspirational role models. We love Erin Brockovich because she fights the system. We celebrate caped crusaders who perform daring feats of bravery. Our characters do all these things, and it's effortless to get swept up to their lives, seeing firsthand what it's like to risk jail to care for these cats. Their stories are not unique. Without any laws in place to protect the cats, colony caretakers are most vulnerable, whether it's being followed by unmarked vans at night or being put on high alert by local law enforcement. Catnip Nation is a spotlight in the fight to teach others about compassion and the responsibility we have as humans to care for animals that live in a unique netherworld between pets and wildlife. The importance of TNR. Central to its success is Trap, Neuter, Return, TNR, a spreading practice worldwide in which cats living in groups are overseen by caretakers who fix and vaccinate them and feed them until the population winnows down. While Tina claims Catnip Nation is not a pedagogic platform to preach about the movement, it's a clarion call to make TNR legal. But it's complex because it requires buy-in and consensus among cat colony caretakers, animal shelters, veterinarians, neighbors, businesses, law enforcement, and politicians. She elaborates, "A collateral movement is required that must be understood at a financial level. Of course, it's easy to engage people emotionally on this subject, but those who make funding decisions often do so with a cold eye. Villages, towns, and cities all have feral cat populations. What must be aired is, how are you dealing with this problem now? How much does it cost taxpayers? Is there any way out of the endless cycle? What makes sense financially? Surely it's not an endless cycle of euthanasia." Foot soldiers are needed to unify the message by communicating with decision makers on a broad level. Tina believes with the right people and their abilities to write, coordinate activism, those with grant skills, and more, that Catnip Nation can help to reach beyond the trenches of those rescue advocates and kind-hearted citizens who already know the landscape, to reach a mainstream audience in which the language can become universal. Hopes for the future. Catnip Nation has been receiving positive reviews for its message, earning Best Documentary at the Hoboken International Film Festival 2019 and Best Feature Documentary Big Apple Film Festival 2019 Summer Edition, and is doing what it set out to do, enlighten and educate. In late 2019, documentary characters Sue and Ray Jones were invited to a meow fixer mixer for Friends of Felines in Wichita, Kansas, a rescue group that Tina worked with during filming. At the mixer, she met a veterinarian who teaches TNR full-time at Kansas State University. He has licensed the film for their veterinarian students, which she considers a victory. Tina would like Catnip Nation to be screened nationwide by veterinarians, shelter managers, animal control officers, school curriculums, law enforcement, and most importantly, politicians with the power of the purse nationwide, because at its core, it's an economic issue to affect the change needed. Next, we'll move on to an article about the seven of the friendliest cat breeds by Erica Sirocco. Personalities vary per kitty, but some cat breeds are known for being more outgoing than others. Let's meet some of the friendliest breeds out there. Sassy, playful, loyal, aloof. Feline personalities come in all shapes and sizes, but today we're focusing on the friendliest cat breeds. Felines on this list of friendliest cat breeds clamor for the chance to turn a frown upside down and go the extra mile to comfort their humans with constant cuddles. So who are these perfect picks? You're about to meet seven of the friendliest cat breeds right here. 1. Sphinx. In a 2012 study conducted by the Journal of Veterinary Behavior, 129 cats from 14 breed categories were ranked based on geniality, and the Sphinx came in as number one friendliest cat breed. Not really surprised when you take into consideration that the fact that the Sphinx lives to please his humans. If he's not acting wild and crazy to keep his owners entertained, you'll find him helping with household chores and even snuggling up to strangers who stop by for a visit. 2. Ragdoll. With a name like Ragdoll, it's no wonder that this feline comes in toward the top for friendliest cat breeds. Known for keeping her kitten-esque nature well into old age, the Ragdoll thrives on attention and affection, allowing her body to go completely limp in the arms of a loved one. While many cats have a curious side, the Ragdoll is a bit more chill, preferring to follow her pet parents around the house, ready for a quick kiss or cuddle at any moment. 3. Burmese. If the Burmese has a slogan, it would be living for loving. This feline makes our list of friendliest cat breeds since he will charm the socks off of you with his friendly nature and gladly accept hugs, kisses, and cuddles from humans and other animals alike. He'll happily spend hours languishing in your lap, talking about his day and purring like a motor. He's also known for grooming, not just himself, but you and his feline and canine companions. Hey, we told you he was friendly. 4 and 5, Abyssinian and Somali. Fun fact, the Somali is simply a long-haired, fluffier version of the Abyssinian, aka Abby, so we're calling it a tie for these two in terms of friendliest cat breeds. High in energy and crazy curious, the Abby and Somali aren't typically found lollygagging in your lap. Why? They prefer entertaining you with their agility and intelligence. What really lands these cats, two types of felines on our list of friendliest cat breeds, acceptance and adoration of all. There's no stranger danger here. Both of these breeds will mix and mingle with anyone they meet. 6. Siamese. The Siamese earns a spot in the roundup of friendliest cat breeds because she's the life of the party and a furry friend to all. She's one loud lady and has no qualms about voicing her opinions or complaints for the world to hear. The Siamese is also sassy, sociable, and affectionate, traits that help her win admirers wherever she goes. She's so affectionate and easy to get along with, in fact, that some compare her personality to that of a canine. 7. Maine Coon. Dubbed America's gentle giant, the Maine Coon is the largest domestic cat breed, and his heart is every bit as big as his. This breed loves everyone he meets, from children to other animals, and adores long, quiet cuddle sessions or rambunctious bit of playtime. A few other personality traits that make him a no-brainer on our list of friendliest cat breeds. He gives frequent headbutts and plays shadow with his favorite humans to let them know how special they are. A friendly reminder on the friendliest cat breeds. While the felines above make our friendliest cat breeds roundup, every kitty has his or her own personality. Therefore, you may come across an aloof Abby or standoffish Sphinx. It doesn't mean that they're not any less special. It simply indicates that they're like to pussyfoot to the beat of their own drum. And really now, who can resist individuality like that? To be more positive about the personality of your future feline, you may consider adopting an older cat whose demeanor is already developed. But if you'd like to mold your cat's character, a kitten may be in the cards. The choice is yours. Next, we'll move on to Dogster Magazine, and we'll start with an article titled The Truth About Puppy Mills by Sassafras Lowry. What are they, and what's being done about them? If you see a cute puppy in a pet shop window or being sold over the internet, it's possible that the puppy came from what is known as a puppy mill or commercial mass breeding operation. John Goodwin, senior director of the Humane Society of the United States Stop Puppy Mills campaign, who spearheads national advocacy work to end puppy mills, estimates conservatively that there are 10,000 puppy mills in the country producing 2 to 2.4 million puppies per year. The majority of these puppies are sold online via websites and in pet stores. First and foremost, the problem with puppy mills are the conditions that dogs are kept in. Kristen Collins, vice president of ASPCA Rehabilitation Services, explains that some puppy mills dogs spend their entire lives outdoors exposed to the elements, while others are indoors crammed in filthy structures. It's not uncommon for these dogs to live in cages with wire flooring, which sometimes stacked on columns, which can injure their paws and legs. Most puppy mill female dogs are bred each heat cycle and spend their entire lives having litter after litter of puppies. The most inhumane puppy mills are investigated and shut down, Many puppy mills continue to operate completely legally under the current regulations by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Stop Puppy Mills campaign says the conditions in puppy mills are so bad that if you or I to keep dogs in similar conditions, the county sheriff would probably be knocking on our door. Yet many puppy mills continue to operate, churning out large numbers of under-socialized and sick puppies because people unknowingly keep buying them. Health and behavior concerns. Common medical conditions experienced by puppies being sold in pet stores from puppy mills, according to John, include parvovirus, giardiasis, and distemper, as well as campylobacteriosis, which can be passed to people. Because puppies born in puppy mills typically are removed at 6 weeks of age, they miss key socialization. They're likely to develop behavioral issues like shyness, aggression, fear, and anxiety. Even if the puppies themselves are never explicitly mistreated, being born in a commercial breeding program has lifelong impacts. Not only do psychological issues like anxiety and fearfulness have genetic roots, but these conditions are further exacerbated by exposure to excessive stress both before and after birth. Once you buy a puppy from a puppy mill, either directly or indirectly, you are on your own. There is no contact between you and the breeder attesting to the health of that puppy, nor will the breeder take responsibility for the dog in the future should issues arise, and you are no longer able to keep the puppy. Many of these dogs end up homeless in shelters and rescues. How to tell a responsible breeder from a puppy mill? Responsible breeders breed small numbers of litters and are selective about what dogs they breed and when. They dedicate their lives to bettering and preserving the breed. When getting a puppy from a responsible breeder, you will likely have to wait for the litter to be born, and there may even be wait lists. Prospective puppy buyers will be interviewed and have to be approved by the breeder before being matched with puppies. Brandy Hunter, Vice President of Public Relations and Communications for the American Kennel Club, explains that a responsible breeder has spent years researching pedigrees of the breed, knows the specifics of not only the breed but of the line he or she breeds. They can tell you generations behind the dogs you see in their home or kennel. Getting a puppy from a responsible breeder ensures that the puppy has had all possible health checks, as have her parents and grandparents, preventing hereditary and debilitating conditions. With responsible breeders, puppy buyers sign a contract explaining that the breeder will take back the puppy for life if the owner was unable to keep or properly care for that dog. As a result, dogs that come from responsible breeders tend to be physically and mentally healthy and also don't end up in shelters. Responsible breeders are also available as resources for puppy buyers for life of their dogs for any training, health, or behavioral questions. Although the HSUS encourages people to consider adopting from a shelter or rescue list, it offers responsible breeder checklist on its website, humanesociety.org, which includes questions to ask like where the dogs and puppies are kept, meeting the parents, and openly discussing all health tests before the puppies and parents and grandparents have undergone. Just to note, in recent years, the number of dogs in some breeds have actually been so low that the breed is actually at risk of disappearing. Responsible breeders of these rare breeds, including Briards, Bedlington Terriers, Lauchen, Skye Terriers, Glen of Imal Terriers, Farrow Hounds, Otter Hounds, and others, are focused on literally saving the breed. By responsible breeding these rare dogs, they are assuring their unique breeds will exist for generations to come. Preservation-minded breeders focus on ensuring the dogs produce not only physically and mentally healthy, but also capable of doing the jobs they were originally bred to do. Ending puppy mills. In addition to public education about what the conditions in puppy mills are like, John says the primary approach for HSUS to end puppy mills is through state-level advocacy and legislation to ban the selling of dogs in pet stores. HSUS has found that it has been able to get much more meaningful reform from shutting down puppy mills because despite the conditions, many are operating legally under current USDA regulations. As of this writing, John notes that 334 localities across the country have banned the selling of dogs in pet stores. Many pet stores across the country now partner with local rescue organizations and spotlight dogs up for adoption instead. When puppy mills are closed down, humane organizations and rescues step in and take large numbers of dogs and puppies. These dogs, especially those who were used for breeding and have spent their entire lives confined, have significant training and rehabilitation needs. There is hope for them. Kristen shares that in her experience, many puppy mills who've come through the ASPCA's Behavioral Rehabilitation Center in Weaverville, North Carolina, graduate after treatment and go on to live successful, happy lives in adoptive homes. Over time, these resilient survivors can often overcome their difficult past to form bonds with people and learn to enjoy life as pets. Because of their limited socialization, most puppy mill survivors need patience as they slowly are desensitized and develop positive associations with their new life. Next, we'll move on to the Be for Active section, Taking Care of Soldiers' Dogs by Lauren Katims. We've all seen the video of a soldier reuniting with his or her dog after returning from deployment. Lots of hugging, kissing, and crying, and not just from the two on screen. The reunions are emotional for everyone watching. Service members can't bring their dogs with them when they are deployed. And if they don't have family or friends to watch the dog for their extended time away, they typically surrender the dog to a shelter, where it will either be adopted or, in some overcrowded shelters, euthanized. Families fall apart during deployment, says Elisa Johnson, who founded Dogs on Deployment, a nonprofit that pairs service member pets with foster families. She felt the need after she was sent to Marine Corps training while her husband was deployed with the Navy simultaneously, without anyone to watch their Australian Shepherd for the 6 months they'd be away. The founders of the three national organizations below have a love for our country and a soft spot for dogs, and they built their groups on the premise that most people do too. Here, they explain how they make sure that when military members return home, there's a wagging tail to greet them. Dogs on Deployment. Elisa couldn't imagine giving her fur baby to a shelter, and professional boarding and kenneling were expensive. Together, in 2011, she and her husband founded a California-based nonprofit that enables service members to search online for a registered foster family to care for their pets. Think of it like Match.com or a dating site, says Elisa, who this year is retiring from the Marines to work full-time with DOD as it expands. Matches are made depending on household activity levels, other pets, and travel schedules. The military member sets up an automatic shipping for pet food and other needs, puts a credit card on file with his or her veterinarian, eliminating all costs for the foster family. In addition to its foster network, DOD provides financial assistance for veterans, military families, and emergency pet care. Last year, through its Pet Chip, the military term for a Hall Pass grant program, DOD gave out $175,000. Every year, we've seen rise in the number of applications for both pet fostering and financial assistance, Elisa says. For more information, visit dogsondeployment.org. Guardian Angels for Soldiers' Pet. In Texas, Linda Sperlin Dominic, a daughter and widow of Army vets, started her organization in the early 2000s after she found that nearly 400 dogs and cats were picked up by animal control at Fort Rucker, a U.S. Army post in Alabama. Since then, she's gathered nearly 1,500 foster families nationwide, she says, and expanded her program to help active members and vets facing medical issues, homelessness, and other transitional housing issues. It's a major need for those who have companion animals, says Linda, who places animals in foster homes for about 12 months while veterans figure out their living situations. This year, Linda hopes to find the right volunteer trainer so that she can restart her Warriors Angels program, which trains service dogs to help soldiers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Learn more at gafsp.org. Pact for Animals. Buzz Miller, founder of Philadelphia-based Pact for Animals, personally finances a large part of his organization's expenses. "We are expanding so fast we're always short on money," he says of his group of volunteers who individually match about 250 pets a year with 600 foster homes nationwide. They also offer free pet emergency services and a 24-hour day support for both military and foster homes. Buzz, a former lawyer and animal shelter volunteer, started his organization in 2011, inspired by the movie War Dogs, Americans' Forgotten Heroes, about Vietnam War troops and their dogs. In 2013, PACT started working with children's hospitals around Pennsylvania and now has expanded services to Arizona and Washington to match foster homes with pets belonging to kids suffering from serious illnesses like cancer and heart problems. That program has been so high in demand that it's recently grown to include hospitalized adults recovering from hip or knee replacement who can't walk their dogs for 6 months. During the fostering period, full transparency is encouraged through pictures, videos, and updates. Buzz says, "We want to encourage happiness between foster and owner." For more information, visit pactforanimals.org. Pause for the cause. Fostering is one way to contribute. Use your skill set, whether it's legal services, marketing, IT, or accounting, to help the back end of these nonprofits run smoothly. These groups are meant to help military families who are impacted by deployment. Share their causes on social media and by word of mouth. Help for military dogs. During deployment, traumatizing and intense situations leave veterans struggling to cope with everyday life upon returning home. Same is true for working dogs in the military or police force. Mission Canine Rescue, a Houston-based nonprofit, works with these dogs until they're ready for adoption. To learn more about this organization's work and how you can help, visit missioncaninerescue.org. Next, we'll move on to WAGS. What's Really on Your Dog's Mind by Mary Schwager. What is it like to be a dog? What does your dog think? Perhaps at times you guess he thinks something like, "Oh, come on, lady, just pour the kibble in my bowl and feed me." Well, if you're Alexander Horowitz, PhD, there's no guessing. She's a pretty good idea what it's like to be a pooch. A highly regarded researcher who has two dogs and a cat of her own strive to see the world from a dog's umwelt. Umwelt? Dr. Horowitz says, umwelt is the worldview of an organization, human or non-human, what they perceive and what is meaningful to them. She's always sniffing out new insight on her four-legged friends as a professor at Barnard College in New York City, where she teaches and runs the Horowitz Dog Cognition Lab. She's the author of the bestseller, Inside of Dog, What Dogs See, Smell, and Know. Her newest book, Our Dogs Ourselves, The Story of a Singular Bond, hits store shelves this past September. The popularity of her research and books shows how many dog owners want to unlock their canine's mind. Deciphering these mysteries is what drives Dr. Horowitz. I have a great interest in understanding the perspective of other creatures, non-humans or human, she says. Non-human animals are especially interesting in that they can't tell us what they know or think or understand in our language. We have to become great readers of their behavior. What she's learned. Dr. Horowitz's research has revealed so much about how critical smell is to dogs and how they play with people and other pooches. There's a great pleasure in seeing dogs act and seeing them try to figure out a puzzle, what we're up to or what's hidden, she says. One of her favorite findings will make you think twice the next time you come home irritated to find your shoe torn up and your dog looking worried. Dr. Horowitz calls her analysis the guilty look study. Full name is Disambiguating the Guilty Look, Salient Prompts to a Familiar Dog Behavior. It tested a behavior that we, as people who live with dogs, see regularly, she says. It's also most misinterpreted. Some people read the conclusions as evidence that the dogs don't feel guilty. It's not. It was evidence that the guilty look is prompted by us, angry. When you read Dr. Horowitz's work, you realize you may have to rethink what you think or know about your dogs. But once you have her insight into the canine mind, it might just improve your relationship with your dog. My research and books provide people with a new interest in looking closely at what their dogs are actually doing and actually need, Dr. Horowitz says. I think that benefits both species. For more info, visit alexandrahorowitz.net or dogcognition.weebly.com. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.